Today on WTL News and Views, we had Monique Verdun, a co-curator of the Fossil Free Fest coming up in April, that is looking for a call for solutions to the issues of carbon production in Louisiana. The due date is February 16th. And we also spoke about her art exhibition in Prospect 4, and she's giving us a talk at the Freeman Auditorium on Wednesday, January 31st. This is our conversation with her. So where is your current show in Prospect 4, and can you tell us about it?
It's at the Historic New Orleans Collection at 400 Charters. And there's a beautiful exhibition right next door of Tony Gleaton, which you should definitely check out. He photographed the African diaspora in Mexico and Central America. It's really incredible work. But I'm kind of was going through all of these years and have been working with palmettos. So I've been harvesting palmettos and using them to do weaving. So I've created these window tapestries with transparencies and palmettos. So that was kind of the photo work on the walls is great, but it kind of felt past tense, and the palmetto structures were really have now made me think of all these other things I want to build, but they're cool, really cool. So if you can check that out. But mm-hmm. I've also been invited by the New Orleans Center for the Gulf South to speak at the this January 31st at the Freeman Auditorium. And so the title of the talk is Heart and Land, but I'll be kind of taking us on a journey of the last, decades, a couple of decades of the work. And, for me, it's funny how art kind of pulls you in and becomes your teacher, and how the forms have changed for me. So, my work started really rooted in this kind of personal family documentary and environmental. I was excited about the oil waste pits when I was 18 years old. Now, as 37-year-old woman, I'm like, oh, they're everywhere. And they're like, it's like as I got led further and further down the bayou, the complexities and the layers that are present here in this place, it continues to teach me. So I'm just going to go from being a girl with a camera to then the how it's shifted and shaped my perspective and what it's taught to me, and try to kind of put some parentheses around the chapters. If you can come out, it'll be at 7 p.m. At the Freeman Auditorium.
Yeah, right over here. Yeah, so, do you feel like you're in when you say put parentheses around, do you feel like you're currently at a new stage, or that things are shifting in some way?
Yeah. The last couple of years, I kind of fell into this world of organizers, and I hate the word activist. People often introduce me as an artist and activist, and I'm like, what? Why is wanting clean air and water have to make me be an activist? Shouldn't we all be actively working towards that? And then people kind of, then they like, yeah. Anyways, titles are funny. I never know what mine is. I think of myself as a water protector and land defender, and I've kind of been embracing that as a core fundamental of my existence. That feels the most grounding and real and right, and helps with all of the anxieties of oh my gosh, this, the Chicken Little syndrome that I have sometimes. There are incredible, specifically women, that I've connected with over the last couple of years who, are wanting to envision the transition and to actively work in building that foundation. There is a foundation that has been built, but it's we don't have any more time to wait. And then there's also, for me, I've connected with the Indigenous Environmental Network. I went to Paris for COP21, and it was there, where I was hearing all of these women from all over the world tell stories that were my own story with a different mask on it. And also, they were like a couple of decades behind where we are in South Louisiana in regards to like what extraction can mean to your life. Mm. So yeah, that's really kind of activated me in a way that I'm still trying to make sense of. You know, I'm a part of the L'eau est la vie, Water is Life, Bayou Bridge Resistance. You know, that they're breaking ground right now. I'm sure they're working as we speak. The black snake, the head or the tail, depending on what you want to call it, you know, that we are connected by water and we are connected by pipelines. And it crosses borders, you know. And I think that recognizing that we're not alone and that we have so much to teach from this place. I'm constantly wanting to like show people, you know, especially visitors to New Orleans. I'm like, no. We have to go outside the parish lines. Like, it's all around us. You know, I live in St. Bernard Parish. We have two multinational oil refineries there and the worst air quality in the nation. You know, it's right there in our face all the time. I think we get really numb to it here in South Louisiana because we're not being offered any alternative visions. But I think that there are pockets of the world that are putting forth reclaiming and reclaiming our power, you know, and that in the like physical, you know, what is free and not going to harm our fellow human or non-human living beings. And how do we maintain our sovereignty, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you named it well. Like, and I feel like these are the two poles that I come across, either the sort of Chicken Little place or the numbness. And just curious, like, what that middle path might look like or how you've navigated that.
Mm. Lots of tears.
Yes.
Yeah. I do these public talks sometimes, and I find myself crying in public, and I'm like apologizing the whole time, but it's real.
Yeah.
You know, it's real, and it's really affecting us all. And I don't have the solutions. You know, I mean, I think that that's why I was really excited to be like, yeah, let's just put it out there, like solutions, like who has a solution, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and also to think about this open source reality that we live in now, too, and how we are connected. And hopefully, you know, I mean, yeah, the internet is this weird thing where it's like, oh, we need plastic to make that happen. You know, but it also is this, you know, it's like, how are we strategic? You know, in what and how we use the resources that we have. And I, you know, everyone's like, oh, well, you got to drive your car somewhere. Yeah. Okay. We've all been conditioned to think that this is normal and that this is okay and that this is how it works and like there's no other way of changing it. But yeah, the other day when we lost power in St. Bernard for 24 hours, you know, and suddenly you're like, my life is so fragile. If I can't turn my phone on, I can't work or know anything, you know? So I think that, yeah, we need to kind of check ourselves, you know, and disasters always do that here, you know? It's like, oh, and we've been riding the waves of disaster, you know, since Katrina. It's like, oh, has it been 5 years? We got something coming? Because, you know, now our economy is kind of based on that, like, too, right? So, like, BP, that was a disaster and an economic weird boom for some people. and how that numbness, right? I always think that times of disaster are these huge times for learning. And yeah, there are these like awakenings. Like we talk about wetlands in a way that we never did before. Katrina. And I'm grateful for that. But I'm also like, do we have to have catastrophe in order to be activated to be like, okay, that's enough. Like, that's not okay. And, you know, No, you can't, you know, put that oil waste pit next to my home that's 1,500 feet away. Like, I was just like, I'm always just kind of like, oh my God, wow, we call ourselves civilized? Right.
Yeah. No, I mean, what a beautiful answer. Tears. And I'm just like kind of thinking about that. You know, like, what do you think keeps people from accessing the grief or like being present with it? Or the loss?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that we're all told that we're supposed to be happy all the time. Mm. And like happiness comes from things, you know? So I think that people want the pursuit of happiness. And like, but then we become zombies and like don't feel it, you know, don't see it, can't take the blinders off unless we like, yeah. And different people are at different points of that, you know? And I think also it's like, we have this, I'm always like, we need to quit pointing fingers. Like, that's not okay. Like, it's, I mean, yeah, heal us. You guys have kind of like, are fracking Mother Earth. Like, that's kind of not okay. And water is like, people need to drink that, you know? And same with Shell. It's like, guys, you're going to like, essentially you're drilling for oil in conditions that are like going to the moon, you know? And it's just like, and it's a huge risk. You can say it's safe, but we know it's not, you know? We know it hasn't been. There are a million gazillion examples of that. Yeah, so I think that nobody wants to be at fault, but we all are, you know? And if we all continue to be like, oh, well, I like to be comfortable, you know? We're going to have to be a little uncomfortable. And I think we have to do, like, look at ourselves and out, you know, and what that means. And also the legacy of, like, how colonialism and the extraction economy, whether it be labor or it be land or it be minerals or whatever that is, you know, that's a power thing, and that, you know, you can't disconnect it from the systemic fallout.
Yeah, and can you speak to, as well, as a member of the Houma Nation, like, what you feel like people misunderstand maybe about the indigenous people of this land in relationship to people in New Orleans? And
wow, yeah.
It's a big question.
Yeah, but I travel around the country a lot, and I'm like, oh, I'm from Louisiana, you know, I'm indigenous, or I'll say Indian, because that's just, yeah. My grandmother, she would say she's Indian Francais, French Indian. Mm. But people are like, oh, like a Mardi Gras Indian? Well, there's definitely some cultural crossover and like history that is deep that we don't talk about enough here. The Houma have a really interesting history with the federal government. We're unfederally recognized tribe, though we have over 17,000 plus members, which would make us the largest tribe, east, or we're kind of on the line of the Mississippi, but we're the largest southeastern tribe. We have a relationship with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which wasn't called that back in the day, but, you know, we met with the government and were petitioning for land rights with Governor Claiborne shortly after the Louisiana Purchase. That's all recorded. And we have since been petitioning the federal government to federally recognize us. So that's one thing. And our territory, the Yaknishido, big land, Houma, countries between the Atchafalaya and the Mississippi River, but a little bit to the east as well. So, I live in St. Bernard Parish. It's the six coastal parishes from St. Bernard all the way to St. Mary Parish. And our ancestral, most recent ancestral, because we were essentially pushed to the ends of the bayous, post the French and the Spanish, and then, you know, kind of moving to a safer safer grounds in the heart of the Delta. You know, so similarly to the Seminoles that kind of went deep into the Delta, the Houma the Seminoles went deep into the Everglades, the Houma went deep into the Delta, and I say, you know, kind of dodge the Trail of Tears, and then also have, you know, like all good Louisiana people, have been have intermarried with predominantly French men. People are like, oh, Cajuns. Like, yeah, there's a little Cajun in there, but like, they're like some of the first French men that came over. Mm. You know, I mean, I have records of like, you know, 1700s, and my grandmother being a, you know, and they're all just like Indian woman. It's like, so it's, yeah, there's a long history there of intermarrying, and not just with Frenchmen, but also African and even Filipino, which is really kind of interesting. So, but you know, what I think is really amazing is that we're, you know, how many hundreds of years, 300 plus years since the De La Salle claimed this territory for God and country, and we're still here and still identifying as being the Houma of this place.
Yeah, and do you come across, I guess I'm just, like, to the greater audience of New Orleans, like, if there's any, like, misunderstandings or things that you come across that you feel like people don't respect or don't have an appreciation of or anything like that?
I think that what one of the things that's been kind of really picking at me lately is that there's been a lot of press and talk about the first federal climate relocation grant, the Île de Jean Charles. And so I've been reading all this stuff, you know, and I sit on the council, so I've been aware of like things happening, kind of. And you know, I think that the way that it's been portrayed is that this is happening in isolation, that the island is one place. But the reality is that from the island, you can see Pointe-aux-Champs, which is, you know, where it's funny, it's like, it's literally half a mile away, but that's where my family's from, you know, but I mean, I have ancestors tied to the island as well, you know, I mean, it's just, it's funny, like how, yeah, the Houma went from having a, you know, kind of a tribal center to then, as they were pushed out by American planters, to these kind of scattered settlements down the bayous connected by the web of water. So I'm just really frustrated where it's like, yeah, this is, and not just for the Houma too, you know, it's like along the whole coast, like we're all facing the rising water and the loss of land and the reality that like, okay, yeah, sure, they're putting in these levees, but we all know how great levees work. And especially if they're not maintained properly for years, you know, which is kind of historically happened. So I think that for me, it's like, you know, that there are indigenous people that live in South Louisiana. I mean, I'm surprised that people are like, oh, there are indigenous people in the Delta. It's like, hello, it's like this one of the largest deltas in the world. Yes, there were indigenous people living here. I love that we can like kind of erase that and, you know, rename it something else and say it's out. But like, yeah, and they're still there, you know. I also think that, you know, for the Houma, yeah, we've been pushed to the ends of the earth, literally, and now we're being pushed north, and we don't really have anywhere to go to. And this grant, this federal grant, which is $48 million or something around there, that's not a lot of money, you know? And if you're going to relocate people, you know, what does that mean? And how do you keep your cultural connections and, yeah, your traditions? And for me, your food sovereignty. Like, the reason why the Houma have been able to maintain for so long is because they didn't need anything. They had everything that they needed in those wetlands. And that, in my grandmother's lifetime, so she was born in 1915, and she passed in 2016. So she lived to be 101.
Wow.
But in that time frame, you know, that all drastically changed with the industry coming in and not only taking land, taking minerals, you know, and then all of the, and dredging canals and putting in waste pits and, you know, having major spills on the regular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Was there anything else you wanted to add or say?
No, I guess just to say again that Fossil Free Fest is coming up.
Mm-hmm. And well, what's the day is the...
So the film festival will start nightly beginning April 2nd at the Broad Theater. And then the festival will kick off on the 6th at the Joan Mitchell Center. And then end, it will be the 6th on Joan Mitchell and the 7th at Joan Mitchell Center. And then the 8th at Grodot Youth Farm in City Park.
Awesome. And then let them know about, so there's going to call for solutions.
Call for solutions. Deadline's February 16th.
Okay. Yep. And then, and that's through Antenna. People can check out the website.
Antenna, yeah.
And then your event coming
Yes,
up.
And then Heart and Land, I'll be sharing some work and having a conversation at the Freeman Auditorium January 31st, which is next Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Awesome. Okay, looking forward to all of that, and thank you so much for your work and for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you.
Awesome.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Bad?